Okay, we're recording.
When we got to Dublin, we went looking for the Thieves' Market. We found it because it was so famous, and we thought we'd just like to see if there were things we wanted to buy there. But I couldn't find any parking. It was just jammed. There was no room in the parking lot. There was no room on the streets nearby, which is typical of European cities.
Mm-hmm.
So I parked several blocks away, and now I'm walking back, and we spotted a car, a little Volkswagen, parked right on the sidewalk. And that kind of surprised us. And a little farther down, there was a constable, the guardia. So we stopped and chatted with him for a minute and said, "What's the story with the cars parking on the sidewalk?"
Mm-hmm.
And the guardia said, "Oh, poor fellow, he couldn't find any place else to park." And to the Irish, this was, "So what's the big deal?"
Right.
Just, you know, just completely different attitude on everything. Anyway, that was just a little sidelight.
Right.
But, okay, so after we left Northern Ireland, we hit all these cities on the west side and went down to Shannon. And then from Shannon, instead of following the coast, we cut up toward Dublin, stopped at the castle, Blarney Castle, kissed the Blarney Stone, and then whatever, the Waterford, we stopped in Waterford to look at the lace works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're famous for their lace.
Right.
And then went on to Dublin. And we had timed our trip to get there on a Friday. The reason being, we thought we'd spend Saturday and Sunday at the National Archives looking for ancestors.
Right.
We found the National Archives, checked into a hotel, got up early the next morning, came back. They're closed on weekends.
Mm.
The National Archives, Thrifty Scots, closed on weekends. We were, to put it mildly, disappointed.
Mm.
So I guess we spent a couple more days just exploring Dublin, then caught the boat across to Wales.
Yes, Llanfairloch.
Llanfairloch.
Right.
And explored Wales from north to south.
Right. The one place I wanted to go to, you asked me at a time, you know, is there one thing you want to see in the UK? And I wanted to see Port Marion, Wales. Here's why you don't remember. Port Marion, Wales was where they shot The Prisoner, the TV series, the British TV series, The Prisoner, with Patrick McGoohan. And it was this millionaire who had collected houses. He would see a house that he liked in Bavaria or some other part of Europe, and he would have it taken apart stone by stone. Not castles, houses. He'd have it taken apart stone by stone and moved to this village. And if he couldn't get the house he wanted, then he would have one. He would have a facsimile built. So it's this strange little tourist town that this Welsh millionaire had built, with all these, you know, you go down one street and it, you know, looks like French villas, and you go around another street and it, you know, looks like Italy, and then up here looks like old England. And they had shot the TV series The Prisoner there in the 60s. We were there in the summer of 77, so it was just 10 years or so later. And I was really into The Prisoner. I wanted to see this. You were exhausted. You stayed in the car and slept while Shannon and I, yes, while Shannon and I explored this town. So that's why you don't remember it.
Okay. Yeah, because what you just described, you know, the streets, I don't have absolutely zero recollection.
Well, I've got pictures.
Okay.
And then from there, we went through Romney Marsh, and did we hit Nether Avon on that part of the return trip, or did we hit it? I'm thinking that's when we went to Nether Avon, was after we had already gone through Ireland and back.
Oh, yeah, another Avon, right?
Yeah, I'm going to move the mic closer.
Because I'm going to move up a little bit.
Okay.
Because I want to get the heater. Nether Avon was where your grandmother's ancestors came from.
Uncle Harold.
And we had a postcard.
Right.
Showing what it looked like in the somewhere in the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we found the street that was in the postcard.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of the buildings were exactly the same.
So Harold had left. Harold was Marjorie's husband, so he was Winnie's brother-in-law. He had left the little town of Nether Avon when he was, sometime in the early 1900s, and traveled to Canada. I think he was in the First World War, and then he would travel to Canada and worked on the railroads and ended up in California. And he had never been back. And all he had was a postcard that it was a traveling photographer would go through these towns and take pictures of a main street and print out the postcards, and someone in his family had sent him, and there was a picture of his sister standing in the doorway of their house, sister that when he had left was just a baby, and now she was, you know, in the postcard, she was like 9 or 10, and that was the only picture he had. So he astonishingly gave us the postcard, pulled it out of a scrapbook and gave it to us. Mm-hmm. And we were able to stand there in the street and hold the postcard up and say, this is exactly where the photographer stood. Because you could see that building, you could see that building, you could see a tree that had been a tiny little tree in the postcard was now this looming tree in the background. And it was very easy to identify exactly the house he had grown up in. And then we went up and we knocked on the door.
And showed him the postcard.
Right, right. My recollection is they opened the door, started to introduce ourselves. They're like, we don't know what you're saying to us. We're not interested. And they started to close the door on us. And then you whipped out the postcard and showed it to them. And then suddenly, like, oh. and they invited us into the house. And we
had tea and crumpets.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, when you think about it, this tiny, tiny little town in the middle of southern England, and these Americans show up on their doorstep, and, you know, A, I can't blame them for wanting to close the door on us, but then B, it was amazing that they invited us into the house and let us take pictures and, yeah, served us tea.
Well, I also recall that we went down to the end of the street where there was a chemist, drugstore,
because
we needed something. I don't remember what now. And that the druggist also treated us with suspicion until we whipped out the postcard and showed it to him. He, you know, oh, my God, and that. And then he called other people over. And, look, look, that's our street. And the date was 1908.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. And they were just, and then they treat us like royalty.
Right. And as I recall, some of those people knew the Carter family.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that little postcard was the magic key to open all sorts of doors.
Mm-hmm. And then that town was not far away from Up Avon, where Stonehenge is. Pat Harold told me that he and his friends used to like bicycle out to Stonehenge and have picnics there. So that same day we went to go visit Stonehenge. Back when
you are correct.
Back when you could actually go to Stonehenge. Now it's apparently surrounded by a fence and you can't go in there anymore.
All right. Then we went back to the people who'd been our neighbors.
Right.
And I don't, did we stay with them or they not have room? I don't.
I don't remember.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, we spent a day and a night. And then left the next day for that air base.
Right.
Well, no. Then we went out to the airfield. I mean, the civilian one. Wow. Help me here.
Heathrow.
Right. Thank you. Went out to Heathrow. And that's when we discovered that we weren't going to get out. Not for a long time.
Yeah.
So, because I knew that we'd flown into this air base, they had return flights to the U.S. So we drove up there, and I don't think it took long. Later the same day, the next day, something like that.
When we flew out?
When we flew out.
No.
No?
No. We were camped out in the airbase at Aldershot, England for 3 days.
3 days?
I absolutely remember that. Because we, okay. Well, okay, so here's the other thing. I was originally planning to not fly back with you.
You wanted to?
I had my passport. I had a youth hostel. I had a your rail pass, and I had a list of the list of youth hostels. And I was going to backpack around. The UK, and for some reason, you had an issue with your 16-year-old son. It never occurred to me that you might have a problem with that.
Even though I was a guy who, at about 15, hitchhiked all the way across the United States.
Right. And the other thing is, I was planning on flying back on Laker Airlines. I figured I would just, hike around until I had only $100 left in my pocket, and then I'd, go back and buy the $90 airfare to get back to the United States. But that was then they had the air traffic controller strike, and suddenly all the people were stuck, and it was a mutual decision. I came to it a little more slowly than you did, but it was a mutual decision. Like, yeah, no, that's not going to work.
Plus, I wouldn't know where you're coming into.
Yeah.
To pick you up.
Right.
So what?
I figured I was would cross that bridge when we came to it. I would have flown into New York.
Guardia.
Yeah.
Kennedy.
Yeah, one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which one?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's the point. And I wouldn't know either until you actually got here and caught up with me.
Yeah, well, I was absolutely prepared for the adventure. But anyway, so we camped out in Aldershot, England for 3 days.
3 days, okay.
It was 72 hours sleeping on plastic chairs, eating out of vending machines. That's where I met Lindsay, my friend that I hooked up with later, and then we flew back on some kind of transport plane. Yeah. I mean, we were there in the belly of this plane with pallets strapped to the inside and
engines on,
right?
Big engines on them.
Right, right. But they flew us back to Dover Air Force Base Dover, Delaware.
Yeah. Dover, Delaware.
Yeah,
Andrews Air Force Base.
Andrews Air Force Base. Right.
Well. Something happened aboard that flight that I never told you before. This is the first time you're hearing it.
Okay.
About 2 o'clock in the morning, I awakened, and I looked out the window. It would be to the north, toward the North Pole.
You saw the Aurora Borealis.
I saw what?
The Aurora Borealis.
Did not. Did not.
Okay.
I saw a rim of light on the earth, like this.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a really long bell curve, and it tapered down on both sides. So I went to a crew member, and I said, "What is that light there?" And he looked at it, and he said, "Sir, that's tomorrow on the other side of the world." I thought, oh, my God, we're up high enough that this light is leaking over the North Pole because of all the snow and the ice and reflecting up, and I can see light on the other side of the world from whatever altitude we're at, 40,000 feet. I mean, think about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's just amazing that human beings could get up high enough to see light from the other side of the world. And I watched it for a long time, and then it didn't go away, so I went back to sleep. Never told you this until now.
I think I looked out the window and saw the same thing.
You think what?
I think I looked out the window and saw the same thing.
Did you?
I have a very clear visual of that. Yeah.
So
because they weren't regular windows. They were like little
ports.
You had to like go stick your face into it.
Hello.
Yes. Well, we're all the way up to 1977.
Oh. You're kidding.
No.
No.
No. 78.
That was 77. I'm thinking about it because I was 16.
That was before you met me.
We went to England in 78 because that was the
No, you're right.
Because he met me in 79.
You're right. You're right. It was 78. Okay.
Okay.
78 it is.
So I came back. You had to have your bag searched at Dover because you looked like a hippie.
I did look like a hippie.
They were checking for drugs, and I tried to... I'm in uniform, and I tried to vouch for you, and they were very polite about it. Said, sir, we want to inspect his bag. Okay.
Okay.
What they find?
Nothing.
Yeah. I think I had some tea.
All right. So then we're back in Dover, and then back to my BOQ.
Actually, you had an apartment. We were staying.
Oh, that's right, the apartment.
Right.
Forgot about that. Okay. And I guess you guys just stayed another day or two and went home?
Shannon went home and I stayed. I think we did it that way. So she had been with you before. We all went together and then she went home and I stuck around for a couple of weeks. Yeah.
Okay, so that's 78.
Remember, I had a friend from Fremont whose grandmother lived... not in Edfu, but in one of the very... Bel Air. In Bel Air. So I was hanging out with him a lot, my friend Scott.
Okay. All righty. So now you go home, and I'm still there.
Mm-hmm. 70.
Now, you did not join us in 79 or 80 because you had started college.
Well, actually, I did join you in... No, you're
no,
right. No,
no,
wait, wait, wait.
No, you didn't.
No. Well, no, I did. I mean, I didn't go on your European trips with you in 79, but I did come out.
And spend some time?
Yeah, because I remember being in Kathy and Mike's apartment in New York. This had to have been 1979.
Okay.
Because they called home, and I had been applying to colleges. And we called home, and Mom said, you got some mail from UCLA. And I told her, I said, open it. So she opened it, and it was my acceptance letter. Because I remember sitting in their apartment in New York, and I found out that I had been accepted in UCLA. So that would have been the summer of 1979.
Okay. So what Shannon and I did, we flew into Spain.
That was the summer you went to Spain,
yeah.
Right?
Well, we started with Spain, then went to Portugal,
mm-hmm.
and then back to Madrid, caught a flight to Athens, spent a few days. Oh, yes, and while I'm in the airport waiting for the flight to Athens, I hear my name called. This is 4 o'clock in the morning. Well, what it was a... major who works in the building across the street from me at Edgewood.
Mm-hmm.
And he had checked the manifest just to see if there's anybody he knew. And he found my name. So he went around calling for me.
Hmm.
And we didn't really know each other that well. I guess we'd maybe met over coffee or something like that. But he was traveling with his teenage son, who was about 18, I think, going to Athens. So we made the mutual decision to stay together, you know, pool our ignorance. And we got to the port for Athens, and I'll think of it. And we took an apartment that was actually one big, huge room with 3 or 4 beds in it, a small kitchen, bathroom. So what we did for Shannon was we draped some towels or sheets from the ceiling somehow. And that was her territory on that side. And she had a bed.
So this we're talking 1979, so she would have been 14.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we were on the other side. Okay, so we stayed 3 or 4 days in Athens, went to the Acropolis, just all over Athens, exploring it. I shouldn't say enjoying it because the fog was terrible. Smog was awful, just awful. And the reason it was awful is because people drove cars without fixing their mufflers and without catalytic converters.
Right.
And the government was too weak to enforce the laws. Were against it, but the government was too weak to enforce the laws. So we choked our way through Athens for 3 or 4 days. And then they decided to go on to Germany. And my deal with Shannon was, I pick a place, you pick a place. I pick a place, you pick a place.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wanted to go to Crete, ancient Crete.
Sure.
Shannon said, no, I want to go to mainland Asia. Well, started out in the United States, went to Europe. Oh, yeah, we popped across to North Africa, to Morocco, mm-hmm. Tangier, Morocco, and stayed there 2 or 3 days, and then back, and then we went to Lisbon and Madrid and then Athens. So it was her turn,
mm-hmm.
and she said, you promised me, what can I say? Okay. So we went to Eastern Turkey, Adana. Adana is on Guam. This was Adana. And there's Incirlik Air Force Base. And
what?
Incirlik. Incirlik Air Force Base. And we get off the plane, and we get a briefing, which the essence of which, there's been a rebellion here in Eastern Turkey, and the rebels are looking for Americans to kill.
Okay.
I really didn't want to have my corpse buried in Eastern Turkey. So, well, we had made friends with a staff sergeant coming down from Athens, and he heard the same briefing we did. And I said, what do we do? He said, well, first, so you check in your BOQ, and as soon as you've done that, come back here, and you can go with me. I know my way around that town. Now, we had been told, first of all, if you know any language other than English, speak it. Well, I was fluent in German. Do not spend American money. Absolutely do not spend American money. And I had Barclays Bank traveler's checks.
Mm.
Wear no loud clothes. I had subdued clothes, so that wasn't a problem. And just do nothing to draw attention to yourself. Okay. So we went with him, walking the whole way. There was no transportation, at least available, between the bus and the base and the town. So we walked. It wasn't that far, maybe a couple of miles. Walked into town, and he showed us around all what there was to see. Now, this is a town, city, of 500,000 people,
mm-hmm.
and they have dirt streets. The main roads were dirt streets. 500,000 people in dirt streets. He took us to his apartment, and it wasn't, one bedroom, kitchen, and a Turkish bath. Turkish toilet. Do you know what a Turkish toilet is? No, you don't.
Do I want to know?
It's a box on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you squat over a hole in the floor. And then you pull the chain and the water comes out of the box on the wall. And you step away from the hole, but it'll wash all the crap down the hole. That's a Turkish toilet. Ah. And the shower was a similar one, but at the other end, where you stood under the box and pulled it, and it came down through little holes in the box,
mm-hmm.
and you're able to take a shower, but you're in the same place with the Turkish toilet.
Mm.
Okay, so at least we saw. We didn't use either one of them, but we saw it.
You didn't use the bathroom the entire time you were in Turkey.
Yeah. Where did we stay? Oh, we went, finally, it got late, so we went back to the base, BOQ. And I had, when we checked in, I'd ask, when is it, what's the next plane out and where is it going? I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And the next one was out 36 hours from the time we landed. I was going to Madrid. Okay, we've been to Madrid. We know what it's like. So we headed to, took it, flew back to Madrid. And did I rent a car? No, I don't think I did, because we thought we were only going to be there a day or two, the mm-hmm. most. Well, this was Monday, Labor Day. And our plan was to get on the plane and fly home. And then from there, Shannon would fly to California just in time to start high school the next day.
Right.
We got aboard the plane. We're getting ready to take off. And some kind of red signal came on in the pilot's compartment. Don't know to this day what it was. But the pilot said, uh-oh, we can't take off. We've got to abort. Okay. So we aborted. Everybody off the plane. Where are we going? You're going back inside. Oh. Well, what do we do then? You sign up for another flight. Oh.
Okay.
Okay. The next flight out was Thursday. Actually, it was Thursday at midnight. So, oh, in the meantime, that's right. The reason that happened was because I guess it was Hurricane David was running up and down the East Coast. And they were a cargo plane. They didn't have to fly.
Mm.
Passenger planes would fly. They'd go into Philadelphia. Cargo planes didn't have to fly. So they waited until finally the hurricane left and they got instructions, okay, now you can leave and come home. Well, it was wheels up at midnight Thursday. Okay. So let me